Andrew Goss and Patrick Timpone. It is the Real World of Money. We have a couple of hours in the can, as they say. We'll continue on for a little longer. Please go to our website sometime and shop around if you're feeling feisty and you got a few dollars you would like to deploy for your health. We have a great site to do that. And I mean some really nice products that we have looked at and used, know the people who make them. We take this know the source idea to a, we're very serious about it. And we know the people, you know, the Daniel Vitalis's of the world, Ken Rolla, who's doing these great water structuring devices, which are cool. The Golden Pyramid thing, Daniel Vitalis with Elk Velvet Antler, Colostrum, and Pine Pollen, our fave, and the Shagun, the Rishi. Really, really nice products. A rebounder, we have a lifetime warranty guy. This is really cool stuff. Really cool. It's a good, great product. Isn't it nice that you could actually bust a mat 10 years from now and they say, okay, and they'll do it. Then, of course, the One World Way. We think it's one of the best ways out there. It's as, well, it's as raw as you can get without really being labeled raw, and they don't let you do that because if it's in a container, it can't really be labeled as raw. But it's too cooled, and they have a process, so they really juice it up to put more kick in the giddy-up. Some of the premium, more premium-grade herbal extracts that you're going to find anywhere is with Shen Blossom. And if you click on this, check out some of these things that they have. And just, I'm really having fun with these. So these are all superfoods that you can just take a, you know, have around the house. I have on my counter. I could take a dropper full and get a real nice hit of goji berries, which is just a great superfood. So you're not taking a, you know, vitamin or a mineral or something that can knock your body things out of whack. But just take a superfood, and especially in the afternoon, Adam Bergstrom says that's the time to do the berries is in the afternoon. So, you know, sometimes 2 or 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll just take a hit of this goji berry stuff. It's really cool, and you can feel it. They have the reishi also, if you like to do a medicinal mushroom. Shizandra is another berry superfood that you can take a little dropper full of that every day. Then if you really want to have some fun, scroll down and get yourself some ginseng extract, 50-year-old ginseng. And you want to take that at night. Roots are more better at night. So that's a cool thing. So these are really wonderful people that you can trust and know that you're getting some great stuff. Edgar Cayce, he has iodine source. We think one of the best iodines ever. One of the best iodines ever. It is the atomic atomized iodine, Edgar Cayce iodine, and then Andreas seed oils. These seed oils in Myron glass, where they can produce these oils with basically no friction, under 100 degrees, no oxidation. Amazing black cumin seed. If you know somebody who's like really sick, cancer and all that kind of stuff, I turn them onto this black cumin seed oil and do some research on it and then get it here. Our black sesame seed, it's a pretty powerful. I mean, you could just Google black cumin seed and see some of the stuff going on with that. And then lastly, in our store, great products. Look at some of them and then shop Amazon whenever you can. So these are just a big overview of what we do on One Radio Network. Then, of course, gold and silver coins. Andrew is one of our sponsors as well. That's what you want to do, obviously, for gold and silver coins, numismatic coins, SDL. So that's kind of our lineup, and there's probably more that I didn't even mention.
Broadcasting live, weekday morning, this is listener-supported One Radio Network. It's the Real World of Money with Andrew Goss. Once again, here's Patrick.
Andrew Goss is a currency historian, and he's a nationally recognized one at that. He's been around a long time doing these buying and selling gold coins for a living, 35 years or so. Two books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books, working on a third monetary history of the United States. His company is SDL, And is your main website is U.S. Gold Coins, or is it? Do you have two?
SGL? No, that's it. Well, AndyGoss.com is not coins.
That's all the money stuff.
Yeah, that's you know, you want to educate yourself, have at it.
AndyGoss.com.
Right, and USGoldCoins.com. That's more commercial.
More commercial stuff.
And although we don't sell gold coins on the internet, that's, you know, by the time I get a coin scanned and listed, it's already sold anyway. So the only thing worth buying is what you can't buy, and that's part of our adage.
Mm-hmm. So, and what about your Facebook thing? How do they do that? People want to get on Facebook?
Oh, yeah, if you're a Facebooker.
Facebooker?
So, you know, Google me, Andy Goss, or search me, I guess.
Facebook, whatever. Yeah.
Make sure you got the right one. I'm in North Jersey. Look at my smiling face on TV, I think is my profile. Oh, no, Trump is my profile picture this time. So, anyway, look me up on Facebook if you're so motivated.
So, what am I...
Or the best way is call me, 800-468-2646. Yes.
So, millennials are, let's see if we can get this right, 18 to 34s, right? 18 to 34s?
Yes.
Census Bureau say that they earn, this is pretty curious, even with a full-time job, $2,000 less in real dollars than the same age group made in 1980.
Right.
More millennials, notes a recent White House report, face far longer periods of unemployment and suffer lower rates of labor participation than they did even in 1980. Well, isn't that really curious? And then you look at their consumer credit loans outstanding, and you look at the charts from... if I could even see what this thing is. And boy, it's like a, man, it's a big curve upwards, Andrew, to the right.
Well, it's because this
goes right from back 2006. You should see this thing. 45-degree angle of consumer debt, our loans outstanding for millennials, 18 to 34. Straight up.
Yeah, right.
So what are these kids? What's going on here?
Well, we've perverted our education system.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, we use our tuition dollars not to pay for the cost of education, but to pay for everything else. Here at Rutgers University in New Jersey, we recently had a scandal where the star of an MTV TV show named Snooki was paid $32,000 to address the commencement class and to tell those kids to study hard but party harder. That was her advice.
Uh-huh.
Was that worth $32,000? No. And of course, we objected as citizens to taxpayer funds being spent this way or tuition funds being spent this way. And the university said, oh, well, those are for mandatory student fees and they're not paid by the taxpayer. So essentially, they've used the colleges and universities to create their own revenue source so that they can appropriate things for themselves that wouldn't normally be granted under normal conditions. So the colleges are not run as educational institutions, but as separate authorities. And they do things such as this, such as paying Elizabeth Warren $400,000 to teach one class. You know, the kids aren't getting what they're supposed to be getting, which is a technical education that will allow them to get a job. And they're paying for everything but that. And unfortunately, tuitions have caused them to go into debt. What was surprising to me is that the number of seniors, well, the number of the next generation. So you have these parent plus loans where after they've maxed the kids out, then they allow the parents to take loans to send the kids to these schools.
Oh, good.
Right? And there are 2 million borrowers in this category between the ages of 50 and 65. So
they've taken out loans for the kids. And why couldn't the kids, Andrew, get student
loans?
Because
they're already maxed out.
Oh, they're maxed out.
I mean, you look at typical tuition for one of these.
It's crazy.
Institutions.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And they keep raising the.
That's right.
They keep raising it because they know that their kids can borrow the money.
That's right. And if the kids can't, well, then the parents can and parents plus. And there's no excuse for not getting your child an education. Well, any parent who takes one of these parent plus loans or allows their kids to take student loans to go get an education that's questionable at best should really reconsider There are easier and more efficient ways to learn a trade or to learn a skill that will get them a job than paying, you know, $150,000 to some dubious institution.
I can't, I don't even know what it is now, but out-of-state kids going to UT, it's just a lot of money.
Like 40 grand, 50
grand. Oh, more
grand
than that.
A year.
I think it's 50, yeah. 60 grand. Yeah.
Yeah, insane. And there's nothing that they can learn for 50 grand a year that they're going to be able to make the money to repay. And you think about it, they come out of these institutions. Okay, so you got a master's in business administration and you're working at a Starbucks and you're not going to make enough to pay back the 250 grand in student loans. So it's like you have a mortgage but no house. So you don't even have an asset that you can monetize. So I can think of 100 better ways to spend 250 grand.
I wonder how many MBAs would know, you know, just the way money works with who creates the money in the Federal Reserve and all the stuff we talk about. They wouldn't know that, would they?
No,
be taught
no,
that in
they
the
wouldn't.
MBA
and in
school.
Fact, no. And a great many of my clients are MBAs and you know, have a master's in business administration and say that they never learned this stuff. They never knew it. I had one particular MBA who worked for Chase. And before the merger, before 99, when I told him that they used to be the same firm, he said, oh, now some of the deals that he did make sense. Now that he knows that they were the same firm at one time. So that about his own firm, he didn't even know. So they don't really teach them the fundamentals of how money is created. I think you got to get up into a doctorate level in economics before you're ever exposed to any of that.
The Oracle of Omaha, he did a little interview, and I just want to give you a little bullet points here. It's kind of interesting to see with the way this fellow thinks. Now, he has a company, or he sells a thing called Berkshire Hathaway, right? And it's about is it about $100,000 a share?
I think so. Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't looked at Berkshire shares.
$100,000, but he does pretty well.
He does pretty well. You can say that.
Oh, yeah. Warren Buffett, he does okay. You know, he does okay. He says on Obamacare repeal that medical costs are the tapeworm of American economic competitiveness.
I agree with him. Yeah,
our health
like
costs
20%.
Have gone up incredibly and will go up a lot more. That's the problem this society is having trouble with and is going to have more trouble with it. It almost transcends political party. Wow. If you talk about world competitiveness, American. So you've talked about this as well. So that's not good there.
Well, it used to be in the 60s and 50s, health care cost as a percentage of GDP was in the single digits, you know, 4%, 5%. I think we still had doctors that made house calls in those days. But now, health costs are almost 20%. So, you know, you're spending a fifth of your money taking care of your health, and you're not really that healthy, mm-hmm. I think. I was watching a special on This Drug Can Kill You.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a raging debate in New Jersey right now about marijuana as a gateway drug. And that, you know, if you let kids smoke marijuana, they're going to be doing heroin next thing.
Okay, so maybe legalize recreational or medicinal up there?
Correct.
Yeah,
they're,
okay.
Raging debate. Yeah. People want to legalize it. A lot of people don't. And that call that it's a gateway drug is the one, the number one excuse.
Sure. Yeah,
it's
number
used.
One. Yeah.
But yet, I was startled at this statistic. Is that 80% of heroin users' first exposure to the drug was in medically prescribed opiates.
Of course. Opiates. Those are the opiates.
It takes them 2 weeks. They give them a 2-week prescription, and at the end of 2 weeks, they're hooked.
Yeah.
That was startling to me. And yet, you know, what are we doing to prevent that? We're so concerned about our kids and gateway.
Well, I'll tell you what we're doing to prevent that. You got more guys going over to President Trump, sending more guys to Afghanistan to protect the poppies. That's what they do.
3,000 more.
Yeah, 3,000 more. What on God's green earth are the United States military doing in Afghanistan for the last 15 years, 20 years? It's got to be about the poppies. I mean, it's not about anything else. It's got to be about opiates, right? I don't know what else they're protecting.
Who's going to control that?
Well, you know, somebody's got to control that.
Mm.
Yeah. It's I mean, I agree, Andrew. These opiates in these drugs.
I had a tooth pulled.
Oh man! And they don't give you some of that stuff.
And, yeah, you know, the guy writes me a prescription.
You'd be out
for
in an alley, you know.
I'm like, what the heck is this?
Oxycontin? Did you take one?
No, I didn't. I still have the prescription. It's.
I wouldn't do that.
It's taped to my.
Well, if gold ever goes, you know, to $20, you might want to take one.
Yeah, or five. that's funny. You know, might need the whole bottle.
He's on Oxycontin. I don't know what we're going to do with them.
Yeah, but, you know, when you start prescribing these high-level painkillers to people who have no exposure, and then, you know, they quickly find themselves dependent upon these pills and then unable to get a prescription for them anymore, they turn to the much cheaper alternative, heroin. It's like legion. It's legendary. And I talk to police officers who are telling me, look, these are regular people. These are folks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
these are strong stuff, man, these opiates. Yeah. And, you know, look what happened to Rush. It happened to Rush Limbaugh. He got hooked on these things, and he was for 2 or 3 years. And and before he, you know, the party was over, and he had to give up, and he got clean. But he was hooked on them. Here's a guy with $1 billion and, and 650 radio stations, and he couldn't figure out his way out of that thing.
Yeah.
It took him 2 or 3 years.
It's a tough, stint. And we're spending so much of our productive money on unproductive cures. And just because they have the label of the FDA and some guy in a white robe gave them to you doesn't mean that it's good for you. That's what I've learned in listening to your show and to your advice. You know, there are better ways to deal with health than the spending that we're doing now.
Well, I never had an Oxycontin, but I can only imagine what goes on with those things, you know. I mean, an opiate, it's like doing heroin, isn't it?
Well, that's what they're both the same drug.
Yeah. Whew. Let's see what else Mr. Buffett's got to say here just for fun. He says, oh, not buying Amazon. He said, I was too dumb not to realize what was going to happen. I don't think Jeff Bezos could have succeeded on the scale. I didn't think that Bezos could succeed. I underestimated the brilliance of this fellow, and he takes a lot of ability. It always looked expensive to me. We miss a lot of things at Berkshire, but he missed that one. Isn't that great? I kind of like that when a guy says that, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
He says, if I die tonight, the stock would go up tomorrow. There'd be speculation about breakup. Some of the parts might temporarily sell for more than the whole. But his guy, what's his name, Munger? Munger's an expert.
Just as old as he is.
Yeah. That's right. Let's see what he's got to say about trade. Trade is beneficial to society, but the people who see the benefits are getting small benefits, invisible benefits. The guy who's going to be hurt by it is feeling it very specifically.
Yeah, he's a free trade.
He's a free trade. Yeah, well, he's one of the boys, right?
Yeah.
On stock buybacks, so, he says, go ahead.
No, he doesn't believe that tariffs are a good mechanism for controlling or regulating a domestic economy, where I think it's the only weapon makes any sense.
You guys differ there. Yeah. He said on stock buybacks, when the time comes, and it could come reasonably soon, we have to reexamine what to do with funds that can't be deployed well. It could be repurchases, it could be dividends.
Yeah.
What's he saying here with Berkshire, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what are you going to buy? Buy back your own shares or give the money back to the investor because there's nowhere reasonable to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine. Can you imagine? Yes. I have nowhere to go with this money. So here, you figure out what to do with it. I'll tell you, for me, in my market, it's a no-brainer. If there's extra money, this is where it belongs. So good luck finding value in other areas. It's been squeezed out of the stock market. It's been squeezed out of the bond market. We're at historically low interest rates. So that kind of knocks out the top two asset categories. And anyone who's willing to take a risk on large real estate investments, boy, they really have to have a stomach in today's environment with municipalities raising taxes to cover their bills. That's an unforeseen variable that didn't come into play in the past. Taxes were rarely considered. Now they're a number one component for a real estate holding's value is how high the taxes are. So it's a scary world. And when a guy like Warren Buffett talks about finding a dearth of places to reinvest capital, that the world is awash with excess liquidity.
Somebody asked him about the board stock holdings, any boards. He said, I've looked at companies, and I looked at one the other day that seven of the directors had never bought a share of the stock. They've been giving a lot of stock. What do you want? What you want is a system that works well in spite of human nature. American businesses overall have done very well for Americans.
Yeah, because the owner of the business was the manager of the business. And, you know, when their own wealth is at stake, they tend to operate a little differently. You know, look at guys like Bezos or others who have reinvested or invested their own money to attempt to get something working. And in the case of Bezos, at a time when no one else thought it would. So, yeah, that's what makes a difference. When you have a bunch of paid managers that get their paycheck, whether or not the company does well, well, there's your RJR Nabisco. You know, that's a classic example of what happens. Lots of waste and lots of abuse.
He was asked about how come he owns, this can't be possible, is it? 28 billion stake in Wells Fargo?
Yeah, he's a big owner of Wells Fargo.
Holy camoly, man. Is that, that's a lot. How much is Wells Fargo
worth? Well, he had $40 billion in Goldman.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he sell? It's pretty strange. Andrew?
We just mentioned Goldman. That's it.
Boy, did you hear that?
I did.
Was that the...
Sorry, Mr. Buffett.
No, sorry, Mr. Buffett. Mr. Goldman, Mr. Slacks, your Slacks.
Yeah. That was interesting...
Why would he sell... I mean, aren't they the big guys on the block? And isn't Warren one of the boys? Why would he do that, I wonder?
Well, Warren bought into Goldman Sachs about 6 months before the government did.
Oh,
and he paid half as much as the federal government and got... Not only did he pay half as much, but he got twice the return.
Good for Warren.
So, yeah. Yeah.
That's what happens when you're one of the boys.
That's what happens, yeah. You get first in opportunity and first out. You know, when the government ponied up its stake, Mr. Warren had headed for the door.
Mm-hmm. Finally, with Warren on his big stake in Wells Fargo, he says, at Wells Fargo, there were three significant mistakes, but one dwarfs all the others. You have to be careful what you incentivize.
There was
an incentive system built around cross-selling that was incentivizing the wrong kind of behavior. The main problem was they didn't act when they learned about it.
Huh. Yeah, but new accounts. Yeah. That's the big thing.
Remember that, but he still has $28 billion worth.
Right. Yeah, and I would, you know, a guy like Warren Buffett would do what a gold bullion investor should do now. So, you know, gold was at 1900, now it's down to 1200. What do? Double my position. And that's what Mr. Buffett does. If, you know, some bad news takes one of his key holdings down, he doubles down. He averages back in, which when most investors run for the hills and, I'm just going to wait for it to go back up.
That's why he does so well. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you have to do the same thing. So he's averaged his way into Wells Fargo. And when the news was really bad, I'm sure he was buying a lot.
Uh-huh. Finally, on autonomous vehicles, Warren Buffett says, driverless trucks are a lot more of a threat than an opportunity to buy in Burlington, Northern.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Now, driverless trucks might eliminate the labor cost, but how much freight he can move with a train with a lot less friction really makes economic sense to him. So I think he's right, owning that entire railroad. You know, that's his, Burlington Northern.
We mention Al every now and then because he invented the internet and global warming, and we're really grateful for that. But he wants to reverse modern technology through the elimination of its fossil fuel-based energy system.
Mm.
That's right. And he's created Energy Transitions Commission that's releasing all this information. They got a big push on. He said it's only going to cost about $15 trillion in these carbon taxes, enough money to give every man and woman child $46,000. But this is going to be the end of fossil fuels. And Al Gore has got this on his... This is on his to-do list. So
yes,
we're really
cap
glad.
And tax.
I mean, we really. Or is he still on this thing with?
Well,
cap
sure.
And
that's
tax
the
thing?
Whole basis. We got to start with the global warming. My wife read me a great article yesterday that global warming causes diabetes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
Because as it's gotten warmer, we tend to be more sedentary.
I see.
And she's reading me this whole article.
Oh.
And gets to the end of it and looks at me and says, well, how come people didn't have diabetes before air conditioning?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask Al about that.
That's a good question, Seth.
You have to ask Al about that.
Yes. So, right, this threat of global warming, if you think of the Hegelian dialectic,
Yeah. That's
the first thing, right? We have to point to the problem. Problem, 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 problem. Global warming, destroying the globe. We're all going to die. New York City's going to be underwater. Terrible, 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 terrible. So once you accept the global warming as a fact, then how do you fix it? Well, cut carbon, cut carbon, cut carbon, cut carbon. And then the final solution, how do you cut carbon? Well,
tax it.
Disincentivize. Charge a tax, yes. Carbon tax. So if you emit carbon and your carbon footprint is taxed. So if you emit too much, you're taxed. And if you emit too little, why, you could sell the excess that you don't use. So that's been his thing since he was vice president. So he still sees the profit in it.
And isn't it curious how if you look at all the mainstream media, the only one I ever hear is NPR to see what they're doing. They have morphed this global warming meme, Andrew, into climate change. So now it's climate change, right?
Right.
And they speak about climate change as if it's as baked in the cake as the sun.
No, it's a done deal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it is a done
it's
deal.
Accepted science.
Accepted science. And it just rolls out story after story, and you get it in there over and over and over again. And after a while, I guess people that listen to NPR, the lefties, well, they're just, well, climate change. I mean,
yeah, climate change.
Climate's changing, and I don't know, it's changing. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, break out the winter coat, put away the Bermuda shorts. That's what you do. And then when it changes again, bring the shorts out, put the coats away. That's how we do it.
Pretty curious, boy, just to watch it all. It's just fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
After being all these years in the media, it's like, like a great, great movie to me.
And don't think for a moment that they don't really control the story and the reporters. What they do is they come out with, this is our theme. And global warming, anything that ties into it or supports it, write a story on it. We'll publish it.
Sure.
So they have what we can talk about and what we can't talk about. Now, we don't want any stories on that. That doesn't fit the theme. Go write something that fits the theme. And that's what the reporters
do. Back in the day, before they got so organized, guys like me, we would do interviews maybe with guys like you,
right?
30 years ago,
right?
And then you just do it or start talking about nutrition and you start stepping on clients' toes, that were
sure
whatever. And then they would just fire you one day,
Yeah, you're done.
You're just done.
And in my case,
they would just fire you.
The peak of that I saw when I had after I did the Tony Brown interview that you saw.
Yeah.
I was booked on Larry King.
Really?
Holy cow.
Because that was on national TV, the Tony Brown, right?
Yeah, Tony Brown's national TV. Right. So next thing you know, I'm booked on Larry King.
Yeah.
And as we're leading up to it, the day before the appearance, now we're canceling that.
Really?
Yeah, that's over. You're not on Larry King anymore. Wow. Okay. I guess we don't really want to talk about this. And we didn't really. And maybe Larry did. Maybe his producer did. Maybe everybody thought that was a good segment, a good idea for a segment. But when those above those folks said, no, no, we're not talking about that, get someone else on. And that's what they did. So
I just,
to me, that was kind of, to think that I could get on Larry King started to make me question the idea of a controlled media. And then I saw what happened to Tony Brown. And Larry King was canceled. So I started winding down my media presentations, to
very
say
curious
the least. Yeah.
So that's when I saw, was it 92, 93 in that range?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just Googled Tony Brown. Well, I just went to YouTube, Tony Brown and Andrew Goss. And that one's not up there. Wouldn't you love to see that original one?
Yeah, somebody
is it around somewhere?
There is. Somebody has it because I've seen clips from it.
Oh, see if you can get that. I would love to put it on the website.
Yeah, I would too, but I didn't record it. And, that was the days of VCR, Patrick. That was
cool. Yeah, I think that was pre-VCR.
Yeah, so if you were recording and you were watching Tony Brown that day and you played the VCR. Now, Tony did say it was one of his biggest sellers, as people would, you could buy the transcripts and the tape.
So what we're talking about, this was a big public
public
broadcasting.
My biggest
public broadcasting show that Tony Brown hosted.
It was Tony Brown Journal.
Tony Brown Journal.
Longest running PBS show in history to that time.
And Andrew Goss gets on there and starts telling about, well, the Fed really doesn't create the money. They borrow from the Federal Reserve Bank.
Yeah.
It's owned by the banks.
Chapter and verse.
Holy
man, he
made
me hold up a U.S. note, hold up a silver certificate. What's the difference between the two? I mean, he really let me get drilling into the details. And if I wandered a bit, he snatched me right back onto, you know, okay, this is late. So the critical information was revealed. The critical information was revealed.
The cat was out of the
bag. On national television for the first time, I think.
Oh, you got me.
I had never seen it before. I'd never seen anyone talk about it before. I'd never seen anything similar. And a great many people, when I say I was inundated, I mean
I bet you were.
I heard from everybody. And
I bet you did.
Yeah. So
I mean, did you hear from any higher-ups, the boys, tied with banking, saying, Andrew, I don't think you ought to do that kind of stuff? Was it anything that spooky, or was
the highest was the counsel, general counsel of the FDIC.
Oh, good.
That was my biggest government contact.
What did he say to you?
Please stop saying we're broke. I mean, he really did. He appealed to my patriotic sensibilities.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was his angle, because what I was saying was a fact, that the FDIC is already technically insolvent. It's only that it has a credit line from the Treasury that keeps it alive. Hmm. And at the time, of course, bank failures were a legend. We had just come off the SNL crisis. And so the FDIC was doing everything it could to paper over the problem. And I was saying, hey, if you think they can cover every deposit in every bank, you're dreaming. And if one guy's house catches fire, the insurance company's okay. But when everyone's house is on fire, there's no way the insurance company can settle all the claims. And that was my reference to the FDIC and its ability to cover deposits. There's no way it can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Even the insolvent banks, it was threatened with its ability to pay just the claims from the insolvent ones, never mind the entire system going cattywampus.
You know, Andrew, it's really curious about the attention span or just the consciousness of Americans, I guess people worldwide, because even, I guess, during Bush v. Gore, they talked about that there wasn't a trust fund, or I don't know if they really said it exactly, but they did allude to the fact that they were going to stop stealing it, remember?
Well, that was Al Gore
and the lockbox and all that thing. But,
and I got
but
my
Americans
greatest...
don't get that. They've never really remembered that, have they?
No, they don't. Yeah. I got my greatest quote from the late Senator Ernest Hollings on that subject.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and I quote, the best way to save Social Security is to stop looting it.
Stealing the money.
Stop looting it. And I thought that was awesome, man. He was the first guy that really said it like it was. Chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee was a gentleman named Charles Rangel at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, well, what better investment can you think of than loaning the money to the government?
Yeah. Okay, final one here from Matt. This is a nice way to end. I've been trying to buy a house for the past 6 months. Financing is not the problem. There is just not very much inventory. I wonder where Matt lives. I've been outbid by higher offers every time. It seems I have to be a crazier than the next buyer in order to get a house. What do you recommend? Throw caution to the wind and just go on a bid high while the money is cheap? I'm well aware that this could end badly, or maybe it's just the start of a very real inflationary cycle.
It's
best to hop on the merry-go-round now as soon as possible. Boy, I wonder where Matt lives.
Well, if he lives in one of the big metropolitan areas, that's exactly what we're seeing here in North Jersey.
Really?
I'm hearing the same tales out of the Austin region, San Francisco,
crazy,
Washington,
yeah,
even in the Midwest. So the general bottom, I think, of the real estate debacle is behind us. And the cause of it was, again, not the bad borrowers, but the mortgage-backed securities that they carelessly issued.
Yeah.
They seem to have a handle on that market now. As long as the Fed is committed and mortgage money is available, then what this buyer is seeing, I mean, I'm involved in a similar situation right now with a house that I'm trying to purchase, and it's like it doesn't matter. I keep raising the bid, and the person, the other person that wants it, is also raising their bid. So I have to drop out. I can't condone this sort of behavior. But I would say keep looking, keep shopping. This isn't exactly my dream house, so I can move on. If you find your dream house, though, and the money's available and the financing available, you can't pay too much, probably can't pay too much, not with, you know, 4 and 5% interest rates.
Well, there could be a little skunk in the old wood pile, as they say, my grandpa used to say. With some of this too, U.S. security regulators are investing whether bonds backed by single-family rental homes and sold by Wall Street's biggest residential landlords used overvalued property assessments. So they got a thing that they call BPOs. Do you know about these?
Broker price opinion.
Yeah. What is this? So is this another mortgage-backed security?
Yes.
So they're doing the same thing.
Well, they not to
a great extent, but
yeah,
there
what
could
they
be
did
something
was
here, though, right?
It was similar when the the bubble burst and all the mortgage-backed securities are being sold,
right.
And banks are taking back houses in scores and hundreds. They put together packages. Here's a 2,000 houses, and they sell it to Appaloosa Capital, which is a spinoff of Goldman Sachs that was started by people with blah blah blah. Okay, so they sell it to a connected entity. And I use the name Appaloosa, forgive me. That's Ray Diallo. Probably wasn't him. But a similar company.
Radiant Group.
Yes.
Yeah, Radiant Group, right?
Right.
Okay.
Buys the entire portfolio, 2,000 houses. And then they hire a real estate broker. And they say, give me your broker price opinion of these houses. And once that broker gives their opinion of the price, then that's the value of the house, you see. So while they may have bought it for $20,000, the broker price opinion is $50,000, so that's what they value it in. And then once they have all the houses valued, then they issue a bond backed by those houses. And the idea is we're going to rent the houses,
yes,
which will give you a return on your bond investment.
Right, right.
And then the bond rating agencies look at it and go, oh, that's
AAA.
Right.
So it's the same drill.
And so now it's the same drill. They took $1 million worth of houses at what they paid and brought in a broker who valued the pile at $2 million. And then they issued a bond for $2 million and sold it to investors.
Pension funds or anybody who
would buy
it?
Anybody that would buy it because it's rated AAA.
Yeah.
And so now the SEC is saying, guys,
what's going on here?
Yeah, what do you do? What'd you do there?
Yeah, you got Blackstone.
Yes.
Invitation Homes have sold more than $15 billion in bonds since 2013, backed by 120,000 rental homes.
Right.
According to data that was kind of clobbered up there. So, and these are rated AAA and sold off to investors like pension funds and
That's
stuff.
That's right. Yep.
Same Big Short thing, right?
Yes, only with a different color on the skin. It's a bond instead of an MBS, but it still involves the same thing, taking a physical asset, and it's why didn't they make a real estate investment trust? Because in this way, the participants, the bonds, the guys who put up the money and bought the bonds, don't participate in any equity growth. They only get their fixed rate of return.
Wow. Oh, Matt just wrote in. He's listening. Hi, Matt. He lives in Minneapolis. So this is in Minneapolis.
Yeah,
every time he goes to buy a house, somebody says, no, I'll give you 2,000 more.
Yeah, 5,000 more, 10,000 more. And a bidding war is never good. The only way to overcome it is to look at multiple properties and put in multiple offers. Sorry.
Just see if you can score
Don't
one.
Get in a bidding war. I mean, at some point, it just doesn't make sense anymore.
I get one letter a week.
We'll buy your house.
Yeah, we'll buy your house. We'll buy your property. Oh, you got 15 acres? We'll buy 5 acres, whatever you want.
Yeah.
Because, we're only 45 minutes from Austin. And
as Will Rogers says, they don't make anymore.
They just don't make it anymore. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Will Rogers wasn't talking about money.
Oh, he was talking about real estate.
Yeah, he wasn't talking about dollars.
And we said, bet on inflation. It's the only thing going up.
Yeah. Oh, Will. Well, you know what Mark Twain said, it's not what you don't know is a problem, it's what you know that just ain't so. And that's why we do the Real World of Money every Wednesday and try to educate you in your study about what money is, what money isn't.
Right.
Mr. Goss, we thank you for that. because
thank you, Patrick.
You're the guy. You're the main dude. You're our main
sulfur.
You got it covered, man.
I'm taking my colostrum. Man. I never felt better, boy. Thank you.
Well, we got to keep you around, kid, because who knows what's going to happen 10 years from now.
Thanks very much.
All right, brother. Thanks a lot. And where can people reach you if they want to say hi or talk to you?
It's easy. 800-468-2646. And ask for Andy.
Ask for Andrew. Andrew Goss, thanks. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow. We got a good show for you. We're going to do the Wheat Belly Fellow, Dr. Davis, and also the Doc of Detox. So we're going to talk about all kinds of things. And Dr. Davis got a new book, How to Ditch Your Doctor and Become Your Own Doctor. That's kind of fun. We like to play doctor. So thanks to Lynn for taking notes all during the week while Sharon could do other things to keep our website spiffy, happy, and everybody on board. If you do find a missing podcast in there, there's a nice little form at the bottom. Simply fill out the form. Make sure you put your email in there, and then we'll take care of it. And we're finding a lot, but, you know, it's just part of the deal when we had to do this whole re-upload and reboot our whole website on the podcast thing after we had a little hacking karma that we've worked out. So, but just let us know, and we'll do what we can. I love you all very much. We'll see you in the morning. That would be tomorrow morning, Thursday, at 9 o'clock Central Time.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.